Fritz Berger and bloodandfaith.com, 8 August 2020. Got a special for you here. I usually don't go into the realm of foreign policy and current events, but I am today, and I'm going to talk about war. I'm talking big war, major war. So with that, let's get started. Fritz Berger and bloodandfaith.com. So Russia. So it's 2016, fall of 2016, before the current election. And for some reason, I was involved in these conversations about Russia and the threat that Russia posed. And a lot of things didn't make sense to me. I said, why is Russia a threat? I mean, people keep saying that Russia's got the population and the economy of Italy. It just doesn't rate. Yet everybody's deathly afraid of them. And of course, they're deathly afraid of them. They've got a nuclear war machine that matches that of the United States. So there is a reason. But if it's so insignificant and the population's declining and your economy's on the rocks, why the big deal? Anyway, I started taking a look at you know what they're doing, and I ended up stumbling across something that seemingly had nothing to do with Russia. It was how the United States got into war with Japan in December of 1941. And as I started studying the lead up to World War II in the Pacific, I was stunned by the similarities between that time and our time today with Russia. And this is what happened. In the 1930s, Japan was involved in its near abroad. It was involved in China. It was involved in its region, outside of Japanese borders, outside of the Japanese islands. And, you know, it was doing some bad things. And the United States said, you're naughty, naughty people. You're a naughty country. And we're not going to put up with this. And the United States imposed a variety of economic and financial sanctions upon Japan, which is exactly what the United States has been doing to Russia for a while now. Let's just call it a while now. We've said, you've been naughty, naughty people. You should have left Ukraine alone. You should not have invaded Crimea. Now you're involved in Syria. And we've passed these different laws. And between the laws that are on the books and the president's ability to impose sanctions, we've imposed a number of sanctions upon Russia and leading Russian business and government figures. And the biggest thing Russia wants to do is sell its oil, sell its gas. They have a large amount of petroleum resources, natural gas especially. And historically, they've wanted to sell this to the Europeans. And the Germans are all for it. They're like, yeah, we want Russian gas. And the Americans are like, we don't want you to have Russian gas. In the 1930s, Japan wasn't exporting petroleum products. It was importing them. And it was 100% dependent upon imported petroleum, as it remains today. And they were 100% dependent on the import of scrap metal to build their navies and to build their ships. And the United States says, well, we're going to put economic sanctions on you, and we're not going to let you import scrap metal, and we're going to shut off your petroleum supplies from Southeast Asia. And at a certain point, the Japanese said, look, if we allow this to happen, we will be crushed. If we can't import oil, we will be crushed, and it will be over for our economy, it will be over for our war, it will be over for our foreign policy. And they weren't willing to do that. They said, we're going to take a gamble. At this point, we're going to take a gamble. Our backs are against the wall, and we are going to gamble. And what they did is they said, well, let's take out the Pacific Naval Base for the United States. Let's go attack a Navy base in a U.S. territory. Hawaii was not a state at that time. We're going to go attack this distant naval base in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. And we'll try to take out, you know, that base and all their ships, and that perhaps will give us time to consolidate our gains over here in Asia, and you know, at least set the United States back many years, if not permanently. And so they did. They attacked Pearl Harbor. They sank a bunch of battleships. By fortune or fortitude or fate, they missed the aircraft carriers, and the war was on. And as we know, it turned out very bad for them. For the Japanese, they completely lost the war. But that was not apparent in December of 1941. It was not apparent at all that that was where it was going to go. The United States was quite concerned. And we We got lucky. We had a few twists of fates that went our way. We won the Battle of Midway. And eventually, you know, the war turned around. We started cranking out boats, U.S. Navy ships, like there was no tomorrow. And we built up this huge Navy. And we had, of course, a huge base of American young men that were ready, willing, and able to go to war. And that fed the war machine. And we pushed the Japanese back all the way across the Pacific, and then we dropped nuclear bombs on them. And that was the end of the war. So the parallels I see are the attempt to control Russia through economic sanctions. Not saying this is a bad thing to do. I'm just saying this is what I see. In the same way that we attempted to control what the Japanese did through economic sanctions. And at a certain point, Japan said, we can't take this anymore. We need to make a bold decision. And the fear, the concern is, surely Russia is looking at their situation and they're making a cost-benefit analysis every day, every year, saying, can we continue to take this? As of today, August 2020, the answer is yes, we can take this, because they are. And it looks like they're going to push through the Nord Stream 2 pipeline into Germany, and that would be a great economic boom for them. They can sell gas directly from Russia to Germany, bypassing Eastern Europe. So we'll see. Maybe this is all just not an issue at all. But the concern is every country, whether it's Iran or China or North Korea, always has to make a cost-benefit analysis of war versus no war. Every country does this. The United States did this with the invasion of Afghanistan and the invasion of Iraq. Cost-benefit analysis, war or no war. And they decided war. The United States decided war. So we invaded Afghanistan. We invaded Iraq. And we're still there. Japan made a cost-benefit analysis in 1941, and they decided war. It's war. The cost-benefit analysis, the risk analysis says we're going to go to war. And they went to war. And, you know, Japan and Iran and North Korea and Russia, every day they make those same calculations. And at this point, we're not at war, at least in the big sense like we did on December 7th, 1941. We may be at war in the grayscale war. Certainly there's plenty of evidence that we're already very much engaged in warfare with the Russians and the Chinese and the North Koreans and the Iranians. At a level below tanks and bombers and nuclear weapons. But it's still there. There's economic conflict. There's ideological conflict. There's information warfare. There's cyber warfare. There's financial warfare. All that is going on below the level of bombs and tanks and missiles. And it's rather fierce at times. The question is, every day, what is your calculus? Do you go big, or we just keep it at this level? And right now, everybody says, let's just keep it at this level. We're not ready to go to the next step. Hopefully, we never will. Hopefully, that will never happen. But the risk is that we do. And if you're a Russian general officer, you have to be looking at the big picture. You have to be looking at the strategy and the long term, not the tactics of how to go to war, but the true cost benefit ratio of a big war and what you risk if you go to war and what you risk if you don't go to war. The risk for the Japanese of not going to war was a collapse of their economy and their military and utter humiliation. And they didn't like that. They had been humiliated when the United States showed up with the Great White Fleet sometime before, and they weren't going to go that way again. They didn't want to be subservient to the foreign devils, the white guys. And so they went to war. And we've all seen, those of us of a certain age, have seen Tora, Tora, Tora. And there's a famous line in the movie where I think it was the admiral of the Japanese fleet said, you guys don't know what we're getting into. We're going to awaken a sleeping giant. Key line in the movie, and basically it foreshadowed the Japanese defeat at the end of World War II. So Russia will make those decisions on whether or not this is worth it to go to war or not. But there's another lesson in World War II. The other big, big lesson of World War II is that fate was not kind to the vanquished. The victors had no mercy on the vanquished. Germany was utterly destroyed. And it is worse than what we generally read in the history books. It's become apparent to me as somebody that has taught history at the university level that most Americans really have very little historical background. And it's sad, but it's true. They have very little historical background. And if they do have a historical background, it tends to be around certain subjects that make a very rigid ideological point. They can all tell you about the Holocaust and the German gas chambers. They can all tell you about how bad the Puritans were. They can all tell you about, you know, Jim Crow laws and, you know, segregation in the South. And they can tell you all about that stuff. But they really have not spent time looking at, you know, how nations rise and fall, how nations go to war and don't go to war, what makes nations great, and what leads to the decline and fall of nations and empires. And a lot of that stuff is just based on history. How did we get into World War II, for example? And so it's unfortunate, but it is part and parcel of the problem in the United States today. So at the end of World War II, Germany was devastated, and it didn't end in, you know, 1945. The occupiers were there. It was the British, the Americans, the French, and the Russians occupied, and a lot of death and destruction continued over there. People starving to death, refugees turned back over to the Russians who sent them off to the gulags. Bad things happened. And in Japan, as we know, they were nuked. We nuked Japan. We nuked Japan in 1945. This was far past the time when Japan was any threat whatsoever to the United States of America. They were not an existential threat to the United States. In fact, I read an article this morning about how Japan had basically said by May 1945, they said, look, we're willing to concede. We're willing to concede in the struggle. Our demands are minimal. We're not asking to keep any territory. Just let our emperor stay in place, and we'll surrender. We'll give up. And the United States said nope, and they pressed home, and they dropped a nuclear bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Now, there's a couple lessons of that. First of all, it's going to be tough for the vanquished in a global state-to-state war. There's no reason to think it wouldn't be. Second of all, the United States obviously had no qualms in dropping nuclear weapons on a country that did not pose an existential threat to the United States of America. Now, if you are Chinese or Russian or North Korean or Iranian, you have to say to yourself, what do these lessons mean? What do these lessons mean? Did Japan make the right decision to attack Pearl Harbor in 1941? Or should they have just never gone there? And I think most Americans think, well, they should never have attacked Pearl Harbor. That was silly. They should have known better. And that's part of the message that comes through in that movie, Tora, Tora, Tori. But the other message that one could take is either go big or go home. The problem wasn't that the Japanese attacked a Navy base in the Pacific. The problem was that they didn't go big enough. They should have invaded those islands and taken them over and made that their eastern naval base in the center of the Pacific and prevented the United States from coming any farther west than the Hawaiian Islands and potentially even been able to raid the west coast from there and destroy our shipbuilding ability on the west coast. So was the lesson of Pearl Harbor, you shouldn't have done this, or is the lesson of Pearl Harbor, you didn't go big enough? That's the scary thing. That's what I look at. If you're a Russian general officer and you look at the history of World War II and how the Japanese got into a fight with the Americans, and you look at the similarities between the economic warfare that occurred between the United States and Japan in the 1930s leading up to 1941, you compare that to Russia, it's not dissimilar. There's a lot of similarities. And then the Japanese made a calculus. Pack it up and allow ourselves to be crushed? Can we weather this out? Or do we go big and go bold? And they made a choice to go big and go bold. And if you're a Russian general, the question is, you know, did they go big enough? That has to be one of the questions that they ask. And, you know, we can only speculate on what could have come out in history. But this is what leaders do. This is what military leaders do, and this is what political and diplomatic leaders ought to do. They ought to be forecasting the what-ifs and the maybes, and they ought to be thinking about how their adversaries think. If we are not thinking through the world situation through the eyes of our adversaries, we are missing something. And I am not optimistic at this moment, because it is very difficult for any U.S. leader, whether they're in the military or on the civilian side, to do anything with Russia but demonize them. And this is not a good thing. You know, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, if you even don't sufficiently demonize the Russians, well, then you're obviously a Russian agent. And that's kind of been one of the main political storylines for the last 4 years in the United States. It's all the Russians' fault. The Russians did everything. And if you're going to be nice to the Russians, well, that's proof that you're a Russian agent. This is not healthy. This is not healthy, because we're in serious times. And if the answer to everything is it's the Russians' fault, and the answer is more sanctions and more economic warfare, I don't know. You know, what is the possible outcome of that? And there's only three possible outcomes. A, we muddle along as we are and nothing happens. B, the Russians collapse. Or C, we face war. And because of the way World War II ended, it would be difficult for adversaries not to come to the conclusion that it will be truly a war to the knife. It will be a war that cannot end in any other way but utter subjugation. And so once you come to that conclusion, you have to make a decision that if we're going to go to war, it's go big or go home. Go big or go home. Once we get beyond the realm of economic sanctions and cyber warfare and you know, little things like that, and you make a decision to go to the tanks and the bombs, it seems to me, and I could be very wrong, but it seems to me that the answer is you go big or go home. Either you have to slay your enemy or you will be slain. And let me give you another example of this. This is just on a more human and a personal level. I'm not a large guy, and I'm not very young, and I'm not very strong, and I'm kind of out of shape. So if I'm going to get in a fight with a guy that's twice my size and half my age, and I see it coming, and he keeps pushing me and pushing me and pushing me and pushing me and goading me and goading me, and I'm just saying, back off, you know, leave me alone. I just want to mind my own business. I want to do my own thing. And at a certain point, if I make a decision that I can't get out of this and he's going to beat me up, what do I do? If I have come to the conclusion that I cannot get out of this fight, that it's not possible, how do I handle the situation? And the answer is, I can't tell the guy, you know what, let's square up and let's have a boxing match and let's fight like men and let's get this over with, because that would be suicide. He's half my age, he's twice my size. There's no way. So what's the answer? What do I do? Well, I pull a shiv out of my belt and I stick him in the gut. That's what I do. You pull out a knife and you stab him when he least expects it. That's the only way. That's the only way I can survive a fight with a guy half my age and twice my size. And I know that. I mean, that's clear. And do the Russians make this decision as well? Do the Chinese make this decision? Do the Iranians and the North Koreans make this decision? And if I were them, and I said this back in 2016, So, you know, I realize that, you know, we're contemplating a war with this country or a war with that country or a war with this other country. How come we're not contemplating a war with all these countries at the same time? It seems to me if I was them, that's how I would do it. That only makes sense to me. If we're going to go to war, let's really distract the United States and let's keep them busy in four different areas. The Chinese would love to take back Taiwan. They're already taking back Hong Kong. The North Koreans would love to make a mess on the Korean Peninsula with South Korea. The Iranians certainly have their eyes on the greater Middle East from their country right through to the Mediterranean. And they are active in this area. What if they all got extra active at roughly the same time? Does that divide America's attention? Does that cause us to overreact? Does that cause us to miscalculate? And the risk isn't, you know, can we fight a war with Iran? No, that's not the risk. The risk is, can we fight a war with four countries at the same time? And look, I'm not even a military guy, but I think about these things, and they're fascinating to me in a very morbid way. But this is what I do. This is what I do. I have a PhD in history. I studied U.S. diplomatic history. And these are the things that I just love to think about. And I'm flat out telling you, these guys are thinking the same thoughts. They have to be. That's what they're paid to do. And if they're not thinking these thoughts, they're not earning their wages. They're not earning their money. You can't be a four-star general in Russia or in China or Iran and not be thinking the thoughts that I'm thinking. Otherwise, you're not a very good general officer. If an amateur like me can think these thoughts, then, you know, how about the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians and the North Koreans? So anyway, that's the risk that I perceive today to be out there. I realize that there are a lot of eyes on China, and I get that. I understand that. I read the news too. But you know, you got to pay attention to the enemy on every side. And for me, just historically, I'd pay attention to those Russians. All right, just a couple of closing comments here. So this is, you know, when I look at these things, I'm not looking at it as from the perspective of current events or news items. My training is to look at history over, you know, millions of people over centuries of time, if not millennia. And so when I look at the world stage today, I look at it through the lens of at least centuries. And it, you know, warfare is a common fact of the human condition. It really is. You and I have grown up in an America where all the wars have been distant and far away. That has been the way it is. Through Providence, our North America has been largely sheltered from the world wars of the 20th century because we're in between two great oceans. And that's been nice, and our neighbors are relatively weak compared to the United States. Canada is a close ally and friend, and they're not that different from us culturally, linguistically, religiously. Mexico is different than us, but it's not that much different. They're not Muslims, and they, you know, their power is quite limited, as we've demonstrated through our own wars with Mexico. So, but that's not the normal course of history. If you look at the wars throughout Europe for a millennia, a lot of bad things happen to people over time. And with the reach of technology, the United States is no longer a sanctuary. We're no longer protected by two oceans. So if I was just to be a logical, rational man, that observed history over the last, I don't know, call it 1,000 years. And if I perceived that the oceans were no longer these great, vast, impenetrable barriers to attack, I would have to conclude that it is likely for the United States to suffer, as every other country does in the course of history, from a major war. I mean, yes, we had our Revolutionary War, and we beat the British. We had the War of 1812, where we survived. We've had the Mexican-American War, where we conquered territory. We had the Civil War, where we killed 20% of our military-aged men. And we've been engaged in wars, heavy wars, throughout the 20th century, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, and wherever else we happen to find ourselves these days, which seems to be just about everywhere. What if those oceans cease to be a barrier? And what if we had another major war? The idea that we won't have a major war is ahistorical. It's not historical. There's no example of history for thousands of years where wars simply don't happen between powerful countries. So, you know, I'm just trying to look at this not as a news item, but just as a fact of history. It's neither good nor bad. It just is. And I was listening to one of my favorite contemporary thinkers, George Friedman. Some of you know who that is. And he was speaking to a group of young people. These guys were, gosh, 30 at the oldest, 20s to 30s. And this was in Europe, and he spoke to them. It was in English, and it was on, a YouTube video. And he said, do you think you're going to see war in your country in your lifetime? And the room was silent. I mean, they didn't know what to say. And I think he knew that was their impression, because this is the coffee club where you go, you hang out with your friends at Starbucks, and you sip lattes and you look at your screen and pretend to visit. And they just really had a hard time wrapping their mind around that. They grew up in an age when there was no war in Europe. Wars were other places. And so they don't really, you know, have that historical knowledge of war in a personal sense. Even though they know, generally speaking, there was World War I and World War II, but the impression that they left was that, you know, well, that was wars when people were racist and nationalist, and we're beyond all that now, so we're beyond wars. And George Friedman said, look, he says, you may not want war, but war wants you. Fritz Berggren, bloodandfaith.com, 8 August 2020.